This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Joe Ramsey. French President Emmanuel Macron, the first leader of a major Western power to meet Vladimir Putin since Russia massed troops near Ukraine, said on Tuesday he believes steps can be taken to de-escalate the crisis and called on all sides to stay calm. Macron, who in contrast to the U.S. and British leaders, has played down the likelihood that Russia may soon invade its neighbor, and he shuttled from Moscow to Kiev on Tuesday in a high-profile bid to act as a mediator. Macron flew later to Berlin for a meeting with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz. In a statement alongside Macron before the talks began, Scholz told reporters, quote, "Our common goal is to prevent a war in Europe." Moscow says it's planning no invasion but could take, quote, "unspecified military technical measures unless several security demands are met, including a promise from NATO never to admit Kiev." Israel's military said it launched strikes against targets in Syria early Wednesday, hitting anti-aircraft batteries in response to a missile fired from Syria. Sirens were sounded in northern Israel after the Syrian missile launch, but it exploded in midair, the Israel Defense Forces tweeted. Syrian state media said the country's air defenses had been activated against Israeli fire in the vicinity of Damascus. The Syrian news agency SANA said one soldier was killed and five others wounded, quote, along with material damage. Israel rarely comments on the airstrikes it carries out in Syria, but has said repeatedly it will not allow its arch foe Iran to extend its footprint in the country. Find more at voanews.com. or follow us on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. The World Health Organization said Tuesday 500,000 COVID-19 deaths had been recorded since the Omicron variant was discovered, calling the toll, quote, "beyond tragic." The WHO's incident manager, Abdi Mohammed, said 130 million cases and 500,000 deaths had been recorded globally since Omicron was declared a variant of concern in late November. It has since rapidly overtaken Delta as the world's dominant COVID variant because it is more transmissible, though it appears to cause less severe illness. Mohammed said, quote, "while everyone was saying Omicron is milder, they missed the point that 500,000 people have died since this was detected." Maria Van Kerkhoff, the WHO's technical lead on COVID-19, said the sheer number of Omicron cases was, quote, "astounding." While the true number of cases and deaths would be much higher than just those known about, quote, "we're still in the middle of this pandemic. I hope we're getting closer to the end of it," she said. Quote, "many countries have not passed their peak of Omicron yet." Van Kerkhoff said she was extremely concerned that the numbers of deaths had increased for several weeks in a row. The U.S. Justice Department said on Tuesday it has unraveled its biggest ever cryptocurrency theft, seizing a record-shattering $3.6 billion in Bitcoin tied to a 2016 hack of a digital currency exchange. A husband and wife team of alleged money launderers was arrested in Manhattan Tuesday morning, the Justice Department's biggest financial seizure, according to Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco, who said in a statement it shows that cryptocurrency is, quote, "not a safe haven for criminals." Ilya Judge Lichtenstein, 34, and his wife Heather Morgan, 31, both New Yorkers, face charges of conspiring to commit money laundering as well as to defraud the United States. A report released Tuesday found the number of Brazilian children aged 6 and 7 who do not know how to read or write has risen by 66% during the coronavirus pandemic. The report by charitable group All for Education found the number of illiterate 6 and 7-year-olds in Brazil rose from 1.4 million in 2019 to 2.4 million last year. That represents more than 40% of children in that age group, a worrying sign for a country that has been hit particularly hard by COVID-19 with widespread school closures that have been detrimental for the poor. Find more on our website, voanews.com, or follow us on the VOA mobile app. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, February 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Okwe in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Baltic states call for more military assistance from Europe amid Russia-Ukraine tensions.
There are certain things what we would like to see. Some of our larger and stronger European allies could follow, for instance, example of United States, because you know that United States are giving quite large military assistance.
President Joe Biden speaks to head the Central Command, warns that Al-Qaeda and ISIS are, quote, reconstituting, unquote.
This is a critical time for the 21 countries of Central Command. The United States faces a new era of strategic competition with China and Russia that is not confined to one geographical region and extends into the CENTCOM area of responsibility.
And retired Pope Benedict XVI asks for forgiveness for, quote, grievous faults, unquote, in his handling of clergy sex abuse cases. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Latvian Defense Minister Artis Pabriks is calling for more military assistance to Baltic states from their European partners, noting the, quote, good example, unquote, of the United States in supporting the three countries. Pabriks says Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania are protecting the borders of the European Union and NATO, and that it should be, quote, taken into account, unquote, by countries in Western Europe when thinking about where to put military and financial support. He says countries like Germany will definitely be capable of giving support similar to the U.S., noting financial and contributions in many other ways, unquote. Berlin announced on Monday it will send an additional 350 troops to Lithuania.
We would be willing to see also such kind of eagerness from other NATO allies in Europe. And I think there are certain things what we would like to see. Some of our larger and stronger European allies could follow, for instance, example of United States. Because you know that United States are giving quite large military assistance also to Baltic countries. It's financial assistance, it's contributions in many other ways. And, you know, we are here. We are not only defending our national borders against the Russian and Belarusian hybrid migrant attacks or something else. We are also countries which have EU and NATO border. So I think it would be just fine if this would be taken into account also by our friends in more western parts of Europe. And I mean, American example is, I think, a good example. Why couldn't we have a little bit kind of sharing of these necessities to assist us to protect our borders also within or among the European nations, not only when there are finances flowing across the Atlantic Ocean from United States to the Baltics, but I believe that such countries as Germans would definitely be capable also to give such type of assistance also to us here. And I'm not begging this because, you know, we are poor guys and we want to live on the expense of somebody else. Not at all. But I think this would be exactly that common sense which is dictated by those current challenges what we see around.
That's Latvian Defense Minister Artis Pabriks. More United States soldiers and equipment arrived on military planes at Zezaujasionka Airport in southeastern Poland on Tuesday. Hundreds of U.S. soldiers arrived on a chartered Boeing 747 in Zezau, located about 100 kilometers from Ukraine's border. A plane of this type can carry more than 400 passengers, and the group is the largest so far to arrive of a deployment of 1,700 service members to Poland. They're mobilizing in response to worries over the impact of NATO's eastern flank in the event of a Russian invasion of Ukraine. Other smaller groups of soldiers arrived on U.S. Air Force C-17 planes, bringing vehicles and equipment on Monday and Tuesday. NATO says Russia has more than 100,000 troops stationed on Ukraine's borders, including 30,000 in Belarus, for joint military exercises this month. Moscow denies it is planning to invade Ukraine, but says it wants security guarantees that includes a promise of no missile deployment near its borders and a scaling back of NATO's military infrastructure. The International Committee of the Red Cross says every day is a struggle for survival for hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians and Russians living along the border between the two countries. Last weekend, a delegation from the ICRC visited the Ukraine-Russian border. VOA's Carol Van Dam asked the spokesperson for the group, Oleksandr Vysenko, how much food and fuel for heating the ICRC has delivered to people living near the border since the crisis began.
The hottest period of time, there were 2014 and 15, And during this period of time, we have more people to assist. With our direct assistance, I mean distribution of our food parcels and hygiene parcels. Probably in this period of time, we had about 80,000 people monthly, because we do it every month. Now we reduce this number to about 25,000 per month, and we are only supporting those vulnerable, very vulnerable people living in very vulnerable places, usually in gray zone, where about 5, 10, 15, 20 people left, and usually they are very elderly people. No, nowhere to go and nothing to do because there's no any shops, even just to spend their money. If we, for example, replace it for financial support, like we did in some other locations, which are less vulnerable and a bit further from the contact line. So, yes, we are trying to move from this distribution of our food and hygiene parcels to financial assistance and to support of, let's call it, microeconomical initiatives when people can earn money by themselves, and we support their business starts. And, of course, in some cases, we also provide some kind of consultations about how to start their business, just for you to understand. It's very small businesses.
Take me through the process of how it works exactly. Like, pretend I'm one of those aid workers on the ground. What am I doing with the fuel and the food? How am I getting it to these people?
All our system starts with assessing people's needs. Actually, we did it in 2014 mostly. And now we have just the list of our beneficiaries. If some people, if their, for example, life conditions has changed, of course, we put them in our list. But usually working with the local authorities to understand who we have to support. We have our internal rules, and it's not like something change.
For instance, what kind of fuel are you talking about? Is it that liquefied gas? And also, what kind of basic food are you talking
about? No. If you, we have a separate program of, call it, winterization. It means preparation for winter. Because in this part of the world, as you know, being living in DC, that it's rather cold during winter time, a bit different from our other contexts, major in Africa or in Middle East, when we have no such program. But here in Ukraine, if you are living in your private house, you have to heat your habitat somehow. Yes. We distribute firewoods, like briquettes, and people actually happy with it. In some cases, we have financial supports, and people can spend money for this. We have no medical assistance directly to people. We are assisting medical institutions because you never can understand and realize what kind of medical assistance people need. Actually, this is the doctor who have to realize this. That's why we are supporting medical institutions.
That's the spokesperson for the ICRC Ukrainian delegation, Oleksandr Visenko, speaking from Kyiv with my colleague Carol Van Dam. Tomorrow is the second part of their conversation. Visenko describes the relationship between Russians and Ukrainians living near the border as fears mount of a Russian invasion. The Ukrainian military says the number of artillery attacks on the border between Ukraine and the Russian-occupied Donetsk and Luhansk regions have decreased, though Moscow continues to mass troops just inside its border. Reporter Victor Lamar traveled to the region and found people there hoping for peace but preparing for war. Anna Rice narrates his story.
In Zolotoye, a town in the Luhansk region of eastern Ukraine, Ukrainian soldiers are keeping watch in the area. Civilians live in this area as well, and gunfire is common. 70-year-old Alexandra Gerasimova says she's used to it, but the livestock are not.
Don't be afraid, Marusia. Don't fuss. No one will hurt you, no. Here, look, this got broken in 2017. We had no windows left. I had to put in new ones. These were broken too, those as well. There was nothing here after a missile fell here.
Nikolai's yard was hit by a missile a few weeks ago. The resident of the Stanitsa Luhanska says there are also mines.
They're laying mines here. I keep finding ropes here. You know, the ones for mines. I don't know how they are used exactly.
The Ukrainian military says the self-proclaimed Luhansk People's Republic is deploying anti-personnel landmines, banned not just by the Minsk Agreement, but also by international conventions. Just a few weeks ago, this village of Novozvanivka in the Luhansk region was in the middle of attacks and gunfire. It's relatively quiet here now. But still, the Ukrainian military have noticed some movement. According to Ukrainian intelligence, Russian troops are actively training, and they have set up artillery units near the border. The Ukrainian military says it won't be surprised if one day they see the cannons at firing ranges pointed at them. But they say they're not panicked, and instead are prepared for what comes next. For Victor Limar in the Luhansk region, Anna Rice, VOA News.
U.S. President Joe Biden speak to head the Central Command, Lieutenant General Michael Kurila, warned in a Senate confirmation hearing on Tuesday that Al-Qaeda and ISIS are, quote, reconstituting, unquote. He added that Iran was the number one destabilizing factor in the Middle East and that any agreement with them, quote, should make sure they do not get a nuclear weapon, unquote. Kurila, who is part of the task force overseeing troops deployment amid escalating tensions between Ukraine and Russia, said he was, quote, very concerned about a Russian incursion invasion into Ukraine, unquote.
This is a critical time for the 21 countries of Central Command. The United States faces a new era of strategic competition with China and Russia that is not confined to one geographical region and extends into the CENTCOM area of responsibility. The Middle East, Central, and South Asia remain complex and dynamic environments. CENTCOM remains a dangerous theater with its own internal threats to American security. The CENTCOM theater is also burdened by civil war and humanitarian crisis. The area is home to 9 of the top 10 most dangerous violent extremist organizations, including Al-Qaeda and ISIS, which are both reconstituting. All of these ill trends are accelerated by water scarcity and food insecurity. China has significantly increased its investment and influence in the region, and Russia acts as a spoiler. If confirmed as the CENTCOM commander, I will protect American interests in the region with these challenges in mind. Well, one of the challenges is the threat to the homeland from Al-Qaeda and ISIS-K. They are reconstituting. The Taliban has not renounced Al-Qaeda. ISIS-K, with the release of the prisoners both from the Bagram prison and Pol-Sharkey, are in the process of reconstituting. While they have aspirations to attack the homeland, they do not have the capability yet. Additionally, we have the humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. I believe there are opportunities in the future of ways that we can work with perhaps the World Food Program and others in the region to help alleviate some of that burden on the humanitarian crisis. I've not always seen eye to eye with Pakistan, but I do think we have a shared interest in regional stability and countering violent extremist organizations. One of the most violent is Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistani, the TTP, which directly threatens Pakistan. Also, the humanitarian crisis inside of Afghanistan threatens the migrants to push into and refugees to push into Pakistan. So I think there is potentially some shared interest that we can work with them on counter VEOs and the humanitarian crisis.
That's President Joe Biden speak to head Central Command, Lieutenant General Michael Kurila. The U.S. military stepping up support to the United Arab Emirates after a series of missiles and drone attacks launched by Yemen's Houthi rebels. U.S. General Frank McKinsey, head of the U.S. Central Command overseeing American forces in the Middle East, has been in the UAE to bolster defenses. Analysts say the attacks on the Gulf nation could hurt its reputation as a stable business and tourist hub with tough security. Dave Gavlak reports from Amman.
Speaking from the United Arab Emirates, U.S. General Frank McKenzie says battlefield setbacks in Yemen by Iran-backed Houthi rebels may have prompted recent attacks on the UAE capital, Abu Dhabi, where a military base also hosts U.S. troops. The 7-year Yemen war has pit Houthis against government forces backed by Saudi Arabia and an Arab coalition, including the UAE. The conflict, viewed as a proxy war involving Iran, has killed tens of thousands of Yemenis, sparking one of the world's worst humanitarian crises. U.S. and United Nations officials have documented Iran smuggling high-end weapons to the Houthis. Medium-range ballistic missiles were fired from Yemen and entered UAE, were not invented, built, designed in Yemen, McKenzie says. So I think we certainly see the Iranian connection to this. Giuseppe Dentese heads the Middle East desk at Rome Center for International Studies. He told VOA that the Houthis are using the attacks to leverage their demands.
Is a strong and symbolic sign that shows how no one in the Gulf is safe and that the Houthi have the capability to hit all these countries in the area. Maybe the main risk is growing internationalization of the conflict with a widening front of new players. For example, Israel, that is interested to support a Abu Dhabi to confront Iran in any scenario of this crisis. This attack aimed to weaken the certainty of the commercial tourism financial hub in the Gulf.
Dr. Andreas Krieg, an associate professor at the School of Security at King's College in London, agrees that the Houthi attacks pose a menace to the UAE's standing as the key commercial and tourism hub in the Gulf and could hurt its safe reputation for finance and security. This is a major reputational damage to the idea of the UAE being one of the safest and more secure countries in the world, Craig told the New Arab Online publication. The fact that air defenses were unable to protect very critical infrastructure is definitely something the UAE will now have to consider. Until recently, the UAE had been immune from such outright missile and drone attacks that the Houthis have rained down on neighboring Saudi Arabia. The Pentagon says advanced F-22 fighter jets are being sent to the UAE and a guided missile destroyer, the USS Cole, will aid its Navy to surveil Gulf waters for shipments of contraband. U.S. President Joe Biden says Washington is considering redesignating the Houthis as an international terrorist organization, a label which was rescinded last February. The UAE has called for the designation to be restored. Dale Gavlik for VOA News, Amman.
In other news, retired Pope Benedict XVI is asking for forgiveness for, quote, any grievous faults on court in his handling of clergy sex abuse cases, but he is not admitting to any personal or specific wrongdoing after an independent report criticized his actions in four cases while he was Archbishop of Munich, Germany. Benedict's lack of personal apology or admission of guilt immediately riled sex abuse survivors, who said his response reflected what they call the Catholic hierarchy's, quote, permanent refusal to accept responsibility for the rape and sodomy of children by priests. The German church commissioned a report from a German law firm to look into how cases of sexual abuse were handled in Munich archdiocese that a retired pope had led from 1977 to 1982. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, warns the Horn of Africa is facing a climate-induced emergency and says the international community must act now to prevent a catastrophic loss of life and livelihoods. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The specter of the 2011 famine in Somalia hangs over the dire situation confronting millions of people in the Horn of Africa. That emergency killed 250,000 people, half of them children. Hunger and malnutrition have worsened in the region after 3 years of consecutive drought. But famine has not been reported in any area. UN agencies, however, say that could rapidly change. The UN Children's Fund predicts as many as 20 million people in Eritrea, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia will need water and food assistance in the next 6 months. Mohamed Malik Fall is UNICEF Eastern and Southern African Regional Director. Speaking on a line from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, he says children will be among the biggest victims of this crisis.
Right now, nearly 5.5 million children in these four countries are threatened by acute malnutrition and an estimated 1.4 million children by severe acute malnutrition. UNICEF fears that this number will increase by 50% if the rain don't come in the next 3 months.
Three dry seasons in a row have decimated crops, led to severe water scarcity, and killed livestock. This has forced families to leave their homes in search of grazing land and water, increasing the risk of disease and severe malnutrition. The World Food Program estimates 13 million people across Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia are gripped by severe hunger. UNICEF's Mohamed Fall says children caught in this climate emergency are missing out on meals, on school, and on access to life-saving health services.
Families are taking extreme measures to survive and in many cases leaving their home which put children on the move at particular risk. This is a crisis that required a collective response, ensuring access to clean water, nutrition, and safe space for children.
UNICEF is appealing for $123 million to provide life-saving aid for the most vulnerable in the four countries until the end of June. It warns many children will die or end up with lifelong cognitive or physical damage if the international community fails to act quickly. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
New research released by the Australian Conservation Foundation, a non-governmental organization, says one of the country's most recognizable animals, the koala, could be moving closer to extinction. It has found their habitats have been severely affected by government-approved land clearing projects. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Koalas communicate using a range of noises. They have a large round head, big furry ears, and a black nose. They eat mostly leaves from eucalyptus trees. Research released Tuesday by the Australian Conservation Foundation has found that the amount of koala habitat bulldozed for mines and new housing estates has increased in Australia every year since 2012. Campaigners want the marsupial's conservation status to be changed from vulnerable to endangered in the states of Queensland and New South Wales. Disease and climate change, as well as bushfires, droughts and heat waves, continue to threaten koala populations. The federal government has promised a multi-million dollar plan to support strategic habitat restoration. A spokesperson said the scheme would focus on weed and pest control, revegetation and fire planning across thousands of hectares of significant koala areas. But Freya Cole, the media and investigations manager at the Australian Conservation Foundation, says more action is needed.
So many people travel across the world to Australia to see the koala. If this government wants to get real about protecting koala, it's not about restoration. That's only a small part of it. What this government needs to do is stop approving projects that are known to destroy koala habitat, and they need to do better on climate.
The koala was listed as a vulnerable species in parts of eastern Australia in 2012, while other populations in Victoria and South Australia are considered to be healthy. Koalas in the southern parts of Australia are bigger and have thicker fur than their northern relatives. This is thought to be a natural adaptation to keep them warm in the cooler winters in southern Australia. Scientists have estimated there are about 92,000 koalas across the country. A 2020 report by lawmakers in New South Wales warned koalas could be extinct in Australia's most populous state by 2050. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists have found that the moon plays an important role in making our planet more livable. Among its functions, the moon manages the Earth's wobble on its axis, which stabilizes our climate. It controls our planet's tides, and scientists found that the moon also affects the behavior and physiology of humans and animals by helping to regulate circadian rhythms. Our moon is quite unique and is larger in size with a 4-to-1 ratio compared to Earth. A new study published in Nature Communications suggests that not all planets can form moons that are as substantial in size as our moon. The researchers found terrestrial planets with a mass more than 60% or icy planets with a mass more than 30% that of Earth cannot form moons similar in size to ours. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including just after meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin, French President Emmanuel Macron traveled to Kiev for talks with Ukraine's president as leaders and diplomats work to de-escalate tensions along the Ukraine-Russia border. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Ofa in Washington, wishing you a great day.
This is The Voice of America. Washington, D.C.